This episode is brought to you by Roberta's, home of Heritage Radio Network for 10 years. Learn more about Roberta's at robertaspizza.com.
Hardcore is a new series from Heritage Radio Network. Over 6 episodes, we're taking a close look at the rebirth of American cider.
Really, it wasn't until about 10 years ago that cider started to be revitalized in the United States.
From the science of fermentation.
So yeast, it's a fungus, it's a unicellular fungus.
To the magic of terroir.
What really excites us is thinking about communicating that very sort of spiritual aspect of knowing a piece of land.
We're setting aside our cider donuts to gain a deeper understanding of this singular beverage.
I love a cider donut. You don't have to have a cider donut with your cider, and I will die on that point.
Subscribe to Hardcore wherever you listen to podcasts. Welcome to Life's a Banquet, the show about the highs and lows of all things edible, spreadable, and Nicole?
Pourable.
That's right, bitch! Welcome, I'm Zara. Who are you?
I'm Nicole.
Sup? All right.
Sup?
Yo, it's almost everyone's kind of favorite holiday.
There are many people that love this holiday.
I am in it for the stuffing, for the butter. For the unbuttoning of my pants publicly.
Yeah.
What's going on? What's new with you? I haven't seen you in a couple weeks.
Oh my God, so much has happened. I don't even know where to begin, but I'll begin with the most recent hilarious thing that happened, which is, well, it's not hilarious, but it is hilarious.
Great, I can't wait to hear it. Am I right, listeners? It sounds awesome.
So I cooked some chili in my house, and it's made my house smell like chili, which is, like, fine, but also kind of, like, meh.
Sucks.
So I also, like, squeezed a bunch of lemons to make lemon juice, so I boiled the lemons with some eucalyptus oil.
Nice.
To, like, make my house smell good. And, yeah. But then I started reading a book and got really distracted, and the whole thing boiled down and burnt so badly that now my house smells like charred lemon char. And it's fucking... It's like one of the things that you can't get out of your house. You have to like boil vinegar to get it out.
Yo,
and
it that sucks.
Smells terrible. And it's hilarious. And then it gets even better. So then I had a little bit of vinegar in my house. So I was like, oh, I'll just boil some of this vinegar to kind of help. I mean, it does actually help.
I know. I'm just picturing now you've burnt the vinegar.
I did. Yeah. Okay. So there was just like a small amount of vinegar and it was boiling and it boiled so fast. I actually sat in the kitchen so it wouldn't happen again. But it fucking did. I was like, uh-oh, it smells weird again. And I go over there, and it's just like a brown crust in the bottom of the pan.
No.
Completely dry.
Dude.
And so now it's a combination of burnt vinegar and burnt lemon smell.
Get a hold of yourself.
In my house. Yeah, I wasn't even drinking. I was fucking sober. And
you did start the fire. Maybe that's the problem. Maybe next time you start boiling something, you should be drunk.
Oh.
Right? Because then you're like really hyper aware.
Laser focused. Yeah. Like, I'm like, oh yeah.
I'm drunk. I can't burn the house down. Yo, that's very funny.
Oh, God.
That's silly of you.
I know.
Yeah. That's a silly mistake.
Consciously, maybe just did it for a story on the podcast. It just, like, it smells so bad. It permeates every part of your house. Yeah. One website recommended that you replace your entire cabinet set because there's no way to get the burnt smell out of the wood.
No. I think you need to just move.
I should move, yeah.
Or just burn the apartment
but
more.
But I can't afford it. This is the cheapest apartment in New York City. I have to stay there forever.
That's true. Damn it. I guess you're going to have to get new cabinets. That's expensive.
I'm not going to get new cabinets. I'm just going to boil vinegar until my eyes burn, and then hopefully that will work. Essentially, what happens is the acetic acid, like, neutralizes the odor ions in the air.
I just had this thought. You know when, like, sometimes, I don't remember what this is from, but you know when you have, like, a pest in your house, like, you have, like, a mouse, so you get a cat, but then, like, the cat starts acting terribly, so you have to get, like, a dog, but then the dog is, like, gone crazy, so you gotta get a bear. And then all of a sudden, there's, like, tons of animals in your house.
A bear?
Yeah. The point of this is to say that I think you should get a bear.
Okay. Well, all right. I will.
Okay, good.
I have plenty of space.
Perfect. That's awesome. So, I just got back from Italy.
Yes,
speaking of bears, I was in Italy. Exactly. I just got back from a trip to Italy. I said, Amare Battaglia, what are your problems?
She's like, I'm going to Italy for 2 weeks. and I was like, can I please have your car while you're gone?
So I went to Italy. I was in Tuscany for a spot of work, some consulting I've been doing over there. I had an amazing, fun time. Spent time with my friends Alex and David, a brother and sister duo who have a beautiful house in the rural hills of Tuscany. Mm-hmm. And their family was great. And very special thanks to my friend Dave for taking an entire week off of doing what he would normally do, which is God knows what, to spend time with me and show me around. It was very fun. We had an amazing time. I laughed. I cried. I ate a lot of bread. And a lot of mortadella. In fact, I'm breaking out, which never happens. And I've been curious about why. I'm like, is it the funk and the farts I got covered in from the plane? Is it all of the bread I ate? Is it maybe a higher level of mortadella in my bloodstream? Who's to say? Also, I wore a mortadella like face mask one night. I just bit the eye holes in the mouth.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That could be it. That could be it. Very greasy.
Very greasy. But it was fun. And I cooked a lot of stuff. And I drove around. It rained every single day I was there.
Is it the rainy season?
It must be. Haven't you seen? Venice is completely underwater.
Oh, yeah. I heard that on the radio.
Yeah. Anyway, so that's what I'm doing. Now I'm back. I have the three H's. Heartbreak, hangover, hunger.
Huh. That's a you.
That's basically my three defining H's of life.
Great.
Cool. This is awkward. Should we move on?
I feel uncomfortable.
I'm sweating.
I'm leaving now.
I'm moving. I'm going to burn your rest of your apartment down. All right. So we have a Thanksgiving sode?
Yeah. What are you doing for Thanksgiving?
Well, actually, we're doing a Middle Eastern Thanksgiving at my mom's house.
That's cool.
Yeah, yeah. It's pretty chill. We were going to do Chinese Thanksgiving. Mm-hmm. I ran it by Bobby, my mom. I could tell she was like less than enthused. She's like, uh-huh.
Right.
Sounds good. And I was like, I know you. And I was like, well, we always try to do something a little bit fun for the past couple of years. So like last year we did Italian American. We did like garlic bread stuffing and creamed broccoli rabe and Negroni cranberries. It got crazy. Turkey meatballs. Man alive. So this year we're doing a Middle Eastern Thanksgiving.
So what's the meat portion?
A live goat.
And a live goat.
Yes, we're going to sacrifice it at the table and bite right into its raw flesh.
Huh.
No, we're going to do like a turkey roulade that's like braised with like preserved lemons and stuffed with olives and dates and all of that kind of fun stuff. And then with the dark meat, I'm going to grind it and do like turkey kebabs.
Great.
I forget what they're called when they're ground up but on a kebab.
I don't
remember.
It
starts with like a K, yeah. I think. I'm going to mispronounce it, so I'll stop there.
Yeah.
Like that kind of stuff. What are you doing?
I'm going to three Thanksgivings now.
Ooh,
one is on, one's on Wednesday in the city, and then on actual Thanksgiving Day, I'm going to two Friendsgivings events. So
wow.
I'm going to be hauling wine. It's also, I'm going from both corners of not Brooklyn, but the boroughs, because I'll be at Windsor Terrace and then Long Island City. So
whoa.
It's going to be nutty.
Wow, that's crazy.
Yes.
You should build a monorail.
I know.
Monorail.
I mean, they have a subway, but what's it?
That's true. Take the subway. It's easier.
It's going to take like an hour, though.
To build a monorail?
Windsor Terrace to Long Island City.
Yes, that's a long trip.
It's like both ends of the G train.
I would just stay home and burn something else in your apartment if I were you.
I should burn all of my clothes because they probably smell like burnt lemons. And let me tell you, burnt lemons just smell like burnt anything else.
Yeah.
Like, there's no cute lemony scent.
It is
involved.
Not cute. No, yeah. It's not
nope.
Good. When I went to, I don't remember where I was, but I like Airbnb'd my old apartment in Bed-Stuy to like two Australian like dudes, which was my first mistake.
No.
And I got back and it smelled like really burnt. And I forget what they said happened, but then later on after threatening to basically have them arrested and murdered in no particular order, they confessed that they burnt a pizza. And it smelled in my apartment. I thought they were smoking cigarettes in there. But
yeah.
It smelled in my apartment for like 3 months or something.
Yeah, it's very intense.
Yeah.
And it like soaks into your paint and stuff.
You know what you should do, actually? Maybe this is too boring for on air. We could continue this conversation afterwards. But like kitty litter. If you put kitty litter out, because it's really absorbent.
Yeah, I'm going to try everything. I even turned on my air conditioner because it actually does condition the air.
Oh, wow.
And I haven't taken it out of my window yet. Conveniently.
Yeah.
Thank God.
Sometimes living alone and also perhaps possibly dying alone has advantages.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I left my air conditioner until November. It actually is a good thing.
Yeah, exactly. Every cloud.
Okay. So let's talk about something theoretically more interesting.
Okay.
Which hopefully. Is, I chose two dishes that maybe aren't necessarily like my favorite things, but that fascinate me. And I was like, why do we eat these things at Thanksgiving? Like, why are they such a part of the iconography of Thanksgiving?
Sure.
And I thought that there was going to be some like conspiracy theory that, you know, goes all the way to the top and that's what, why we eat these things. But it turns out, no, it's just capitalism like everything else in America.
Sure.
The two items are jelly cranberry and green bean casserole.
Mm.
And both of these items are essentially part of Thanksgiving tradition because they were aggressively marketed to
right.
be so. And everyone just fell for it.
People are strong-armed.
Yeah. So I'm going to start with jellied cranberry.
Yuck! I love it.
I like it too, but I don't know. I like the look of it, but I don't really usually eat it.
I like everything about it. Can I ask you though, do you prefer, if you had to eat it, would you do the smooth or the chunky?
Smooth.
Yeah, of course.
Just like the can-shaped log.
Yeah, but the one that's chunky, I think, also comes out like a can.
Oh, I actually didn't even
with
know
chunks.
That there was a chunky version.
Yeah.
More authentic.
Yeah, that's authentico. For us real foodies.
Okay, so
authentico.
Here's the story of how jellied cranberry in a can came to be. Cranberries, along with Concord grapes and blueberries, are the only... So a lot of people say that those are the only Native American fruits,
mm-hmm.
but it's actually not true. There are others, but these are the only ones that are commercially grown as crops in the United States. So
interesting.
Cranberries are native to the U.S. They are low-lying vines like strawberries, and they grow in bogs, which I did not know.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
What, were you born under a bog?
Yes. No, then I would know about the cranberries.
I meant log. I meant log.
You knew they were grown in bogs?
Of course.
Of course.
I mean, I went to second grade, and we visited a cranberry bog, I believe.
Well, that's the thing. It's an East Coast situation.
It's hoity-toity.
So in the Midwest, we're just like, what? It comes from a kid.
Can I surprise you with the fact that I happen to know my cranberries?
Yes.
That actually the largest cranberry-producing state is Wisconsin. So,
right.
so stuff that in your fucking can.
Well, Wisconsin is really far away from Indiana, so go suck on your own. Cranberry.
Fine. This friendship is over. All right, go. I'm sorry to keep interrupting.
No, I like it. Okay, apparently I was the only one who didn't know they grew in bogs, but they're layered much like bogs where we make scotch, like peat, sand, gravel, and clay. They're originally formed naturally from icebergs, but now, of course, we make them by hand.
Right.
Some vines in Cape Cod are as old as 150 years old.
Whoa. Mad old. That's
I know.
Like wine. That's like wine steez.
I know. It's really cool.
Yeah,
I didn't realize that. I know they should be like selling the like, you know.
The old vine nest.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Well, this here cranberry is on a 150-year-old vine in a bog. This bog was dragged out by a glacier.
And interestingly, there's not a lot of specifics about like, because I really wanted to know why it became so prevalent, but there's not really definitive information on that. We can only conjecture, but we do know that it was already a strong enough American tradition to have cranberries at your Thanksgiving table in mm-hmm. during the Civil War, because General Grant ordered that there be cranberry sauce at the Thanksgiving Day meal that they had for the soldiers during the Civil War.
That's extreme.
I know.
He must have had a bladder infection.
It's very rare for men to get those, but it was a different time, I guess.
That's true.
So 100 years ago, the only way that cranberries were sold was as fresh fruit. Like, they, you know,
yeah.
they didn't can them.
Sure, sure.
And the thing about that is that they actually only have a very short harvest season from September to November. So that explains part of it, like, why we have it at Thanksgiving, because mm-hmm. that's when they're being harvested.
Sure.
There's some dispute about when exactly the first commercial bog came to be, but uh-huh. we know that by the early 19th century, cranberry, the business was in full swing, and there was tons of competition, and everything was actually just, it was like a booming business.
Yeah.
Kind of. Then this guy named Marcus Uran.
No! Listen, I don't believe you about that part.
That's
Marcus Uran?
Yeah.
Like,
are you
going
to make a urine joke or a Uran joke?
Like, oh, no, I was going to make a urine joke just again with the bladder infections.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
yeah keep it a line through.
Keep it a line through, a bladder line through. Exactly.
Yeah, so he was a lawyer with a bladder problem, and he decided that he wanted to be a cranberry farmer, so he bought a cranberry bog.
Whoa.
And he's actually the person who invented canning cranberries. So, like, he was like, well, we have to be able to extend the time that we can actually put cranberries out into the world, making more money, so
sure.
let's put it in a can. So in 1912, they came up with this canned cranberry sauce. It's not the jellied cranberry yet, but it was canned cranberry sauce. Into the world, people were like, hooray! And he also, he was like an inventory guy. He was really, it was like also like a shrewd, scary, bad business guy. But he also invented cranberry juice cocktail. Ooh. In then 1933.
So yeah.
That's all Mr. Uran.
Mr. Uran's life's work, an obsession, was cranberries.
Yeah.
Isn't that interesting?
It is interesting. He was also kind of like, he was very competitive and did some probably shady shit. During that time, he invented the jellied cranberry sauce, which came to be in 1941. So that's the first time that it was actually the gel can-shaped thing. He essentially realized that, so like federal regulations was starting to impact farmers in a way that this guy was really worried about. So he convinced his competitors, even though he had like a vicious competitive relationship, he was like, we should actually bound together and form our own corporation or whatever so that we can fight against the federal regulators or whatever.
Interesting.
And so essentially they started out and they were called the Cranberry something or other, but then they became Ocean Spray.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And Ocean Spray today is still a collective of 600 independent farmers.
Really?
Yeah, so those guys on the cranberry commercials, like the Ocean Spray,
they're not actors.
They're real.
They're real?
I never believed that.
Weird.
I mean, they might still be actors. I didn't look it up. Wow. And so, thanks to Mr. Uran, Americans eat 5,062,500 gallons of cranberry goo every holiday season.
Wow, that's so much.
That's 4 million pounds per year.
Ugh.
200 cranberries per can.
Whoa.
26% of American households make fresh cranberry sauce.
Frickin'. I just made some the other day.
Jerks.
I prefer it.
Yes, but like, you know, like there's, it's just, you know, whatever. Whatever you want to do is fine.
I'll eat that stuff. I like cranberry out of the can. Cranberry out of the can with a little great when gravy gets onto it. A little sweet and salty.
Totally.
That's my vibe.
Umami.
Oh, yeah.
But
snap into a cranberry.
Only 5% of cranberries currently produced are sold fresh. The rest are all canned.
Hmm, that's so fascinating.
I know.
I read a statistic that people who live within a certain close proximity to cranberry bogs are like, much more likely to get like brain cancer because they use so many chemicals
for
the cranberry farming.
Wow, that sucks.
It does suck.
What kind of stuff's in there? I thought it was just peat and gravel.
No, that's not. No. They're very hard to grow, and so they use a lot of chemicals.
Yeah. Well, that's darn it.
I know. Just when you think you could just bite right into a can of cranberries.
Jerks.
You can.
If you eat one bite per year.
Yeah, one bite a year is
probably
okay.
Fine.
Yeah.
Okay, so the next item up for grabs here is the green bean casserole.
Yum. You like that?
I do like it, yes.
I do too.
Because of the mushy consistency of the green beans and also the crunchy onions. Although, as a child, I would not eat it.
Yeah,
because it had vegetables in it. So it was invented by Dorcas Riley.
What is your problem? What's all this? Why are you doing this to me? You know I'm not mature enough to handle these names.
I'm sorry. That's her name. She invented it in 1955, originally calling it the Green Bean Bake. Hmm. She was one of the first employees at Campbell's Home Ec Department, which was essentially their recipe testing.
Oh, cool.
Kitchen, test kitchen developing area, whatever.
Do we know why her parents named her Dorcas?
Dorcas was a fairly common name in like the
30s. Okay. I'll allow it.
It's not the first Dorcas I've come across here.
It's not the last.
The initial goal of the recipe development was to make recipes from stuff that people just had around the house already. So in 1934 is when cream of mushroom soup first kind of came out, but at the time in the 50s it was so widely used in the Midwest as a casserole filler it was called the Lutheran binder.
What? Wow.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
That's amazing.
Like, so much to think about. Like
that's either like, to me, kind of sounds like a wrestler, like a really religious wrestler name, or like a wrestling move.
Right.
Something about wrestling.
To me, I thought of like some sort of binder for your body because, you know, like religion.
Oh, yes.
You know, like, you know.
Totally. Like, you know, to keep you from having sex or having impure thoughts.
Totally.
You just put the Lutheran binder on you.
Stick it on there.
Whoa.
But it's actually cream mushroom soup, so.
Yuck.
Yuck. I actually like cream mushrooms.
Yeah, yeah, sure. It's the best.
So this is a perfect example of essentially what I was talking about earlier, which is the food advertising at the time. So basically, they would develop recipes to give to the public that would increase demand for certain products. So they weren't like necessarily like organically coming up with recipes and like, oh, cream mushroom soup would be great in this. They're like, use cream and mushroom soup so people will buy it more and figure out ways to do that. There's a really cool book that's called American Advertising Cookbooks, How Corporations Taught Us to Love Spam, Bananas, and Jell-O by Christina Ward. And she basically just talks about how, like, nobody ate bananas.
Yeah.
And they, I mean, the banana thing is also horrible.
Oh, yeah. Bananas are evil.
But they basically used advertising cookbooks to change the way that people eat and made food, and it like worked really well. Yeah. And it's just really interesting and fascinating slice of American time that's still with us today. Like yeah. that advertising is why we still eat green bean casserole and that canned jellied cranberry. It's fascinating.
It is. It's very interesting.
They printed the recipe on a can of Campbell's curry mushroom soup, and that's when things really like took off and exploded, which I think is actually genius.
Yeah. It's really genius. It's very smart.
To think of a world before there were recipes on items is fascinating to me.
I think it started, if I'm not mistaken, because I did a story about chocolate chip cookies one time with the Toll House cookie recipe. I think that's around the time when they started doing recipes on bags.
That was definitely one of the earlier ones.
Yeah.
Interestingly, when they changed the size of the bags, they changed the recipe.
Really?
So that it called for whatever size bag they changed it to.
Oh, wow. That's so interesting.
I know. So, yeah, and essentially there is also no exact moment when everyone started eating green bean casserole at Thanksgiving. It's just another one of those things that just became wildly popular and now is powerfully nostalgic.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's interesting because the generations now are not even around anymore that were actually, like, the first ones eating it, but it's just something that's carried over and over and over again.
Right.
And it's still with us today, which I think is really interesting.
I do, too. They make at Trader Joe's now, just so you know, they make, like, a fried onion thing that's, like, a ripoff of whatever French's fried onions, and they're delicious.
They are delicious. Very high calorie, though.
Quite.
So every year, 20 million American homes make green bean casserole for Thanksgiving. 40% of canned mushroom sales are for green bean casserole.
Oh, wow.
Only 40%.
Oh, interesting.
And
the other ones are just for, like, Lutheran binders?
Mm-hmm. Yep, totally. And then Dorcas died in 2018, so just last year. She was 92. But in 2002, Campbell's donated the original handwritten card with the green bean casserole on it to the National Inventors Hall of Fame.
Cool.
I know.
That's cool. Amazing. That's a good story. I love it.
Very heartwarming.
Yeah, very heartwarming. And esophagus warming. And mouth warming. Cool, cool. Those are great stories. I'm, like, very interested in both of them. And we never really had the green bean casserole thing growing up at my house. But I always wished we did.
Yeah.
And I've, like, had it, like, nibbles of it at other people's houses. But I kind of want to, like, actually make it. Like, the real version.
I've had both versions where they make it with fresh green beans and canned. Mm-hmm. And I feel like the canned ones, even though I hate canned vegetables for the most part,
yeah,
the texture is what you're really going for.
Yeah, you want to mush, right?
But canned green beans have a very specific flavor that's kind of gross.
I've never had them.
They're just, I don't know. So I think you should make them with fresh.
Fresh, but just like long cook the beans.
Yeah, long cook the beans and like slice them thin.
Until they're brown.
Yeah, burn them.
Burn them with some lemon.
Until they coat the bottom of your pan with a black sludge.
That sounds great. Okay, cool. On that note, let's take a quick break, and we will be back with some more riveting content. Goodbye.
My name is Brandon Hoy, co-owner of Roberta's, a super-duper awesome place. Roberta's is a very, 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 very proud sponsor of the Heritage Radio Network. We're also super awesome. Thank you, Heritage.
And we're back. Hello. Hello, everyone. I hope you enjoyed that commercial break.
We did.
We loved it. We are just chit-chatting like a bunch of old so-and-sos here and about to get into some very interesting Thanksgiving tales. Now, my story today is a little bit non-traditional. Last year for Thanksgiving, I did the story of the Thanksgiving Day Parade. I talked a lot about turkey pardoning, so I kind of feel like I exhausted a lot of, like, there's actually not as much historical content about, like, fun, wacky Thanksgiving stories as one would hope.
Because of its dark past?
Well, yes, because of the murder and the, you know, pillaging, raping, disease spreading, taking over land that doesn't belong to you type thing. So I found like little things. I told Nicole last night, I was like, I'm going to do herbs. And when I came in today, I was like, I'm not doing herbs anymore. And she was like, oh, I'm so sad. I was wondering about what the history of herbs was all about. I told her all I had was Paul McCartney, whatchamacallit, Simon Garfunkel. God damn it.
Cut this out.
Cut all of this. Jeez, cut it out. Just kidding. Leave it in. Anyway, I was going to talk to us about Simon Garfunkel, Sage, Rosemary, and Thyme. Mm-hmm. But there wasn't a lot of content there. So I went in a different direction. First, I'm going to start you off with a joke. Please, hold on to your butts. What happens when you're too harsh on cranberries and make them sad?
You're too harsh on cranberries?
Yeah, and you make them sad.
I don't know.
They turn into blueberries.
Oh, that's not true.
It's not. But it's cute. It's funny. It made me chuckle on the train.
Both Native American fruits, though.
That's true. That is true. Okay. So I'm going to tell you a story, and I'm going to let you guess what it's about. I'm going to reveal it in a couple of paragraphs in.
Okay.
So some credit Clarence Birdseye with inventing frozen meals. Some don't. He developed a system of packing and flash freezing baked food, fresh food back in 1923, the same year that Sir Richard Attenborough was born. That's just a little trivia that I added in.
Very nice.
Because I know you love Jurassic Park.
I do.
The TV dinner can actually trace its history to planes, because on airplanes...
Wait, sorry, I just have one question.
Please.
Did you look up the year 1932 for famous people that were born during
1923,
it?
I did, yes.
And he just happened to be one?
Yes.
Amazing.
There was a couple others, right. A handful. That's the one I picked, because particularly because I knew you would appreciate it.
Thank you.
Okay, so the TV dinner kind of had its history in airplane food, because a company called Maxon Foods and Maxon Food System began manufacturing frozen compartmentalized meals to heat up on airplanes in the year 1945, the same year Rod Stewart was born.
People were flying around in airplanes in 1945.
Mm-hmm. I know. Crazy. So in my notes, it auto-corrected to say EOD Stewart, but I know that it was really Rod Stewart. Okay. These were called strato plates, and strato plates featured three compartments for a meat, a vegetable, and a potato, and they were incredibly easy to heat and to serve. So this is essentially the framework for the TV dinner. I've just given away what my topic is. It's the TV dinner, and there's going to be a reason that it's related to Thanksgiving. Okay, so following the footsteps of the Maxon Food System, a gentleman named Jack Fisher started Friggy Dinners in the late 1940s. They were called Friggy Dinners.
Friggy?
F-R-I-D-G-I Dinners.
Friggy.
Friggy Dinners. That's what I said, isn't it? Friggy Dinners. Everybody get crazy. It's time for Friggy Dinners. Dinner's on the table. First, it's in the Friggy. Okay, frozen dinners to be sold at bars and taverns. It didn't really take off, though, until two brothers named Albert and Meyer Bernstein started a company called Frozen Dinners, Inc. Really creative.
Creative, yeah.
In 1949, don't know who was born in that year, probably no one, which sold frozen dinners in Pittsburgh area under a brand name called One-Eyed Eskimo.
So back then, that's also what...
In my notes, it says under problematic.
Yeah, One-Eyed Eskimo.
Yeah, the whole thing sounds wrong.
Although
Eskimo isn't derogatory, is
I'm not going to go for the penis joke here.
No. Okay, good. Me neither. I'll go for the vagina joke.
So did microwaves exist in 1949? Or were they cooking them in the ovens?
They baked them in the oven.
Okay, got it.
So in 1954, again, no one born in that year, when Swanson Foods, which was already known for canned and frozen foods, they started selling a frozen dinner of its own, which was launched as a huge marketing advertising push with the new name TV Dinners.
Ah.
So a salesman named Jerry Thomas worked for Swanson, had visited Pan Am in Pittsburgh, and saw what they were doing with the airlines. And this was an answer to a problem, because Swanson had for some reason overordered Thanksgiving turkeys by 260 tons.
Oh,
they had
no.
A 260-ton surplus of turkeys that they were putting in railroad cars, frozen railway cars, I guess.
They're not alive anymore. They're already dead.
They're dead, yeah. Yes, they were dead, and they were in, freezers. that were is like a railroad big cars.
Mistake.
It's a huge uh-oh. It's a big oops. Am I right, ladies and gentlemen and germs? So they needed to figure out what to do, and that was this guy's solution. So he kind of became known as the father of the TV dinner.
So
no, go ahead.
This guy, 26 tons of extra turkeys.
There's 260 tons of extra turkey.
And he is like, the only way that we can process this is to come up with a whole, like, he basically, the solution to the problem was he invented TV dinners on the spot.
Exactly. Because like the whole company was like, what are we going to do with this? And he had just seen what they were doing with pre-packaging and freezing dinners for airplanes. So he's like, why don't we do this and market it as something for our company? And we'll put like some of this, some of that. And it's going to be marketed as a frozen, basically, Thanksgiving dinner.
It's fascinating. Also, that's really was the golden era of like ingenuity, advertising, and stuff like that.
Totally. Yeah, crazy. Absolutely. It's all very Mad Men, although a bit pre-Mad Men, but pretty much around the same time. So they packed, the first meal they did was turkey, cornbread stuffing, peas, and sweet potatoes. And like TV was just getting popular at that time, so they were like marketing on TV. The box was a TV, like a little thing with like little dials. That year, Swanson sold 25 million TV dinners, and they were 98 cents per package.
Seems expensive.
It seems like a little bit. I mean, I guess, because in today's money, that's like over $300, right? It's very expensive. Yes, it was very high class. So Betty Cornyn, a bacteriologist, which I think is just like the most fascinating job that I've ever heard, being a bacteriologist and gross. Who decides to do that?
You shouldn't do it as a hypochondriac.
No, absolutely not. It's like deciding to become like a gynecologist. It's like, who wants to spend that much time with this product?
Wow.
I mean, really, like, oh, I love bacteria so much. Anyway, Betty gave the credit to Gilbert and Clark Swanson for coming up with the concept of TV dinners, even though, like, this other guy was, they said that he came up with it. It doesn't really matter, but she said they kind of were the ones who came up with it.
Why is she the one who decides who gets credit for
it? I don't know. I guess because she loves bacteria so much. She thinks she's a goddamn expert in everything. So she worked on the project, and she was the one who, like, tried to make sure that everything would heat at the right time. So she's like, oh, we have turkey, we got peas, we have cornbread. Like, what if the turkey gets dry by the time that, like,
right,
you know? So she was, like, really integral part of doing that.
It's interesting that they cared about that.
I know.
Because it doesn't seem like they'd actually made it into the... I don't think TV dinners are...
Are, like, great. Good. No, yeah. They're not at all. So in this, like... In this first ad I was reading, I was like, it only takes 25 minutes at 425 degrees, which sounds like so long.
It's like cooking a whole turkey.
I mean, 425 degrees is extremely high, and like 25 minutes, it just seems like it would be kind of like your lemon situation.
Yeah.
Burnt, and you would be needing new cabinets. But anyway, people loved it.
I guess, but it's frozen when you put it in there.
It's frozen. So... It still seems, I mean, I guess that makes sense. I don't know.
I cook a frozen pizza.
And it's 25 minutes?
20 minutes, 425.
Okay.
And it's fine.
Well, there you go. So another interesting thing about TV dinners is that it promoted feminism because it was a way for women to not have to spend time cooking all the time.
Okay.
And that's like, you know, it like coincided with women getting out of the kitchen, so to speak.
Sure.
So the National Women's History Museum points out TV dinners did more than just feed families. Their convenience and quick cook time gave women who usually did all or most of the cooking more time out on their own to pursue jobs and other interests while still providing a hot meal for the families. One of the first advertisements for Swanson featured a woman pulling a Swanson dinner out of her grocery bag and promising her husband, "I'm late, but dinner won't be."
That's good.
I know.
That she won't. He still expects her to cook the meal, which is bad, but...
Well, and apparently this guy, Jerry Thomas, who created TV dinners, would get a lot of, like, hate mail being like, why did you create these TV dinners? Now my wife doesn't cook anymore, and I want her to cook a homemade meal like my mommy used to. And Jerry Thomas was like, sorry, brah, I'm a millionaire. I don't care.
Don't write me, dude.
Not my chair, not my problem.
Also, I like that this husband, like, she's late, and the husband is just sitting there waiting for her instead of maybe starting to cook something on his own.
Or heating his own goddamn TV dinner.
Get your own fucking TV dinner, bro.
I know.
Salisbury steak.
Ooh. Gotta be honest, loved the Salisbury steak. So I remember having TV dinners a lot when I was a kid. I was very much a latchkey kid, and I would be responsible for heating up my own TV dinners. And I remember the ones where, like, a dessert also came in them, but, like, everything sloshed around. So you'd take out, like, a Salisbury steak. It would come with, like, maybe some, like, potatoes, Salisbury steak, like, cranberry or something, and then, like, a brownie that was covered in gravy.
Yeah, well, you're supposed to leave the cellophane on it a little bit, I think, to help
that.
I don't know. I mean, I remember that you... poke a fork in it like break the seal. But also we had Kid Cuisine is what we
Oh, yeah. I had those too.
They had the little dessert brownie in the middle thing.
But do you remember those like sauce always getting on the dessert?
I don't remember that. I also just be like, there was a lot of like chicken nuggets, which is the worst possible thing to microwave.
I know. Don't it's disgusting.
So mushy.
I loved TV dinners back in the day, but I mostly actually just loved like Stouffer's mac and cheese, just like straight up.
Oh yeah. My mom used to get the French bread pizzas.
Oh, that's dope.
All the time.
That shit is dank.
Yeah, that was, those are great.
Really, really good. So microwave dinners didn't come around until 1986, the same year Desi Arnaz died.
Wait, so microwaves were invented before 1986, though.
Yeah, 1986 is when I don't know when the microwave was invented, but that's when the microwavable TV dinner came out.
That's crazy. That's so late in the game.
I know, it seems weird.
So people were just baking their TV dinners in the oven until 1986.
Until 1986.
When I was 6 years old. I had been alive for 6 years.
Yeah, you were alive during the time when of the baking.
Yeah, I was.
Yeah.
Right, because all those 5 years before that, people were putting them in the oven.
Yeah, my mom was just telling me this morning how much she used to love TV dinners.
Damn.
Which is cute. I don't know. I feel like it must have been a little bit better or worse, but like I just think you get them now. Everything is so mass produced now.
Yeah, I feel like I remember when Kid Cuisine sort of changed, like the quality changed, and I noticed it.
You
and
did
as a kid, and
did
I was
you
like,
say anything?
No, I didn't write them.
You didn't
a letter.
Tell an adult.
Like, why did you change this quality of
my fish sticks are so soggy?
They're like, yeah, and then like the quality just changed. I feel like the same thing happened with Lunchables.
Oh yeah.
And but I also was thinking about frozen dinners in general, which I now just never even think about or eat.
No.
But I used to eat lean cuisine all the time in college because it's like low calorie.
Sure.
I used to buy like 10 of those at a time.
Yeah,
and just
pack
like
them in.
Heat them up in the microwave and have, you know, whatever the hell.
I know, my dad and I like used to get into it. So like my dad, as you know, but maybe some of the listeners don't, was sick with cancer for like 10 years. And I would go down there a bunch and I would cook for him. And I would always like, I mean, I wouldn't cook him the healthiest things because at a certain point I was like, it doesn't matter. He's not going to like get any better. And he was overweight, whatever. But I would freak the fuck out when I would see that he would have lean cuisines in the freezer. Because I'm just like, this is just like, no offense to anyone who eats lean cuisine out there. This is just my personal issue with my father. Because I knew he probably also was eating like 5 of them at a time.
Sure.
And it was just like crap. And I would get so mad and I'd throw them out. And that's just like my biggest anger with him. I don't know why.
Sure. I mean, it's very processed. And so you don't want it to be, you know.
Yeah, but he ate so much other processed stuff. Like he always had chips and candy and cookies and stuff. And like that didn't bother me. It was something about that. Because I think it was because like I would make him frozen meals that were like good, and then I'd come down there, maybe would still be a couple of the frozen meals that I made in the freezer, but also lean cuisines.
Oh, so like a personal attack.
Yes, it felt like a personal attack. Exactly.
I think, you know, I remember enjoying lean cuisines and being like, how can they have all of these items for only 200 calories?
Well, yeah, and I think that like frozen dinners, like a lot of things can just be nostalgic, and it's like not even good. It's just, you know, it's good to you because you remember it. Kind of like Kraft macaroni and cheese.
I still think that that's good.
I haven't had it in a long time, but I bet it would be.
It's really good.
I like 2 packets of cheese in it, though.
Ew.
What do you mean?
I think one is enough.
You think?
Yeah.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
I like it a little watery with 2 packets of cheese.
Interesting.
I know. I'm a fucking psycho. So what are your tips for having a kind of stress-free Thanksgiving and our chef recommends?
My tips are to not cook the meal and just be a guest, which is what I'm planning on doing for the 3 Thanksgivings that I'm going to. It is a little stressful to think about which wines to bring.
Yes.
Like, I know that the first one I'm going to, they don't care about wine, so I can bring the cheap sparkling wine from where I work.
Yeah.
I mean, it's perfectly good, but, you know.
Yeah.
And then the other 2 that I'm going to on actual Thanksgiving Day is full of wine knowledgeable snobs, so I kind of want
to
impress them a little bit, but I don't want to spend, like, $350. So.
Sure.
That is stressful. I think the best thing that you can do is plan ahead.
Totally.
And if you work in a restaurant, buy from your wine list. It's really fun to be able to do that. And yeah, the other thing that I think I've learned from other people who always cook Thanksgiving is to actually just plan ahead. So like make sure that you are doing small things. Like you can make the dough now. You can basically set up all the dishes that you're going to put stuff in and label it. That's what Sam Sifton just told us in the New York Times newsletter today. And I was like, that sounds stressful. Yeah, just kind of, also just kind of take it with a grain of salt. You're hanging out with your friends. Like,
totally.
It's not, no one is ever going to be like, oh my God, this fucking Thanksgiving was disgusting.
No, it doesn't matter.
It's all you remember, the actual like community with your friends and not the turkey.
Agreed. I think that a couple of things are could make it easier are, one, which I did last year, if you're having a big Thanksgiving, rent a proofer. So, like, a proofer is, like, a, for anyone out there who doesn't know what that is like, a metal hot box, basically, that runs on sternos, and you can rent one for, like, $100, and they'll usually deliver it to your house if you, like, call a local rental company, because that way you don't have to worry about, or, like, rent some chafing dishes or stuff like that. So, you, I think one thing that people, like, really freak out about Thanksgiving is, like, timing, about, like, oh, I don't have enough room in my oven or enough burners in my stove, so getting things like induction burners or chafing dishes or renting a proofer can make it like really a lot easier.
Sure.
Also alcohol, drugs, Xanax.
Yeah. Bon Appetit this year was like, here's some things that'll help you. And then was like, don't drink for a change. And I was like, that feels very judgmental.
That was so irritating that it lit my skin on fire.
And I also, I just think it's frustrating because like the whole like sober curious, I don't know. It just feels like they're hopping on a trend, and
100%.
I found it to be very irritating and insulting and judgmental.
I agree. It was Bon Appetit. And also it was very like hypocritical because much of Bon Appetit is always about like, drink this, try this drink thing, like do this drink, make this cocktail. This is good. This is boozy. And it's like, it totally was jumping on a trend of, and which is a good trend if that's what you want to do, of like being sober and not drinking, or even like low ABVs or like NA drinks. That's cool. But
and, like thinking about like drinking over a long period of time is helpful to actually like be like, well, let's start with something low alcohol or not. You know, start off with seltzer or whatever, but not to be like, don't drink for a change. I was like,
I know
you're actually talking to yourself, you drunks at Bon Appetit.
I know.
I don't need to be involved in this.
I know. Agreed. Exactly. This sounds like a personal problem. For a top three, what are your top three favorite Thanksgiving foods?
Top three Thanksgiving foods are mashed potatoes, rolls.
Oh, rolls. Wow. Yeah. Surprise.
Really?
I mean, rolls are great. I just wasn't expecting you to say that.
Yeah, I almost never even eat the turkey.
Oh, I'm not surprised by that.
I don't care about it, and I don't, whatever. And then my family actually, this is all white starches, but they make like little egg noodle, not egg noodles, but like little homemade noodles that they just serve like alongside of everything.
Wow, like so, spatzle?
Kind of? Yes, exactly.
Yum. That's really cool.
I know. It's super good. I mean, haven't had it in the last couple of years because I haven't been home for Thanksgiving. But
oh, that's good.
It's very good. So all of the white things that they have at Thanksgiving are my favorite.
Sure.
The bread, the mashed potatoes, the noodles.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's a time for indulgence of carbs. Am I right, ladies? And so mine are... I love stuffing. I can't lie.
Oh, right. I forgot. I love stuffing also.
You can have four. That's fine. I love stuffing... I love cream spinach.
Oh yeah, that's not something that we ever had.
Really?
I feel like you probably don't need cream spinach and green bean casserole, both.
Yeah, that's a, it's a very similar couple things. And my number one favorite thing is my mom's corn pudding, which she hasn't actually made in a couple years, but I love corn pudding, like it's a corn souffle. It's so good. And I like gravy on everything, and I like everything like to mix together a little bit, like a bite with of this and a bite with that. I am kind of like missing, I do really love doing traditional Thanksgiving food. So I'm like, oh, you know, we're doing like, last year we did Italian, this year we're doing Middle Eastern. So I'm like, eh, I miss the like traditional flavors of Thanksgiving a bit, but I don't know. Maybe next year we'll just go back.
You can also just make it any day of the year.
That's 100% true.
Break out of the mold.
Yeah. Break out of the cranberry mold. Am I right? Bring that circle, that joke back right to the beginning.
Yeah.
Well, I hope that you have an awesome Thanksgiving. I am sad that I'm not going to be seeing you.
I know.
I'm just going to basically sit and cry all day.
Same.
Yeah?
Yeah.
That's sad. no, I'm looking forward to it. I actually like made sure to come back from Italy that I would have time to not only do this episode, of course.
Of course.
But to do Thanksgiving. And they didn't understand, those darn Italians.
They're not even Italian. They're expats from America.
That's true. They're not from America. They're from Australia. And
okay.
The rest of the world. However... they do not understand Thanksgiving. Although, my friend Alex's husband is American, and he understands Thanksgiving.
They have it in Canada, too.
They do?
Yeah, in October.
In October?
Well, it's not American Thanksgiving. It's like their own deal.
Got it.
I mean, they also...
What are they giving thanks
they
for?
They also displaced many Native American people, so...
That's true.
That's what they're giving thanks for.
Oh, Canada. I need to get up there. You ever been to Canada?
Yeah, a couple times.
You have?
Yeah.
You like it?
I don't know. I think I went there for an exchange program with my marching band when I was in middle school.
What the hell?
And then I went... It's very close to, like... I went to Detroit, and then it's right across the border there, so we went across to the casino.
Oh.
Because you can drink younger there than you can in the U.S.
Can I ask you a personal question?
Yes.
What instrument did you play?
The clarinet.
Oh, I knew that for some reason.
You did, yes.
Either you told me, or just I can see it all over your face.
Yeah. I look like a clarinet.
Okay, guys. That was a fun episode. Did you have a good time?
I had a great time.
Yeah, me too.
We laughed. We live, laugh, love, my motto.
It's wine o'clock somewhere. Isn't it, ladies? Okay, should we get the hell out of here?
Yeah, let's go.
Let's blow this frozen banana sand. See you later. Bye. Oh, wait, hasta la pasta. Life's Banquet is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org, or connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, and more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click at the heart at the top right of our homepage. And thanks for listening.